Welcome to Folkcraft. I'm your host, Temperance Alden.
And I'm your co-host, Aaron Oberon.
And today we're going to be talking about garbage magic, and more specifically, filth magic. So this is actually Aaron's topic, so I'm going to let you intro it.
Yeah, so this is something that's near and dear to my heart in a lot of ways. And I kind of, the little term that I've come up with that I enjoy is the animism of filth. And this is basically just kind of looking at those aspects of our world that we find disgusting, repulsive, or filthy, and often man-made, as just as full of spirit and just as critical to our bioregion as our, like, entrenched swamps or majestic mountains. And then garbage magic, as kind of a separate but related thing, is a term that just helps kind of focus the conversation, basically literally utilizing garbage as your main method of magic, or kind of entangling the two to survive off of garbage. And so this is an interesting topic because it does kind of, it intersects into kind of our cultural norms a little bit, and it even intersects into privilege and the privilege of being able to ignore some of the grosser aspects of our day-to-day lives.
You know what this makes me think of, this topic in general? Do you know Emmett the Otter and his jug band?
No.
It does kind of remind me of what we're about to talk about, because Emmett the Otter went against all odds, and he took what he had, and it was literally this product that you use to clean filth. And he turned it into a musical instrument, and he made it into something that he could thrive with. And so in a lot of ways, it does remind me of the topic at hand.
And I think that kind of ties into another point that I wanted to make, which is this is not a new topic by any means. It is something that I don't think is in, like, the discourse, right? Like, it's not something that a lot of witches are discussing. And that's my kind of predisposition is the witchcraft community, and typically, like, the bioregional animism community or communities, because I think there's a lot of small ones. But this is by no means new, right? A quick Google will show you that there have been Roman gods of sewage. Cloacina, which is, I think, where we get the word cloaca, which is the scientific name for a bird's butthole, basically. Fun bird fact. Means a bunch of other things. But so we have Roman goddesses of sewage and the removal of waste. There are a number of Japanese spirits, yokai and kami, who are related to, like, toilets and feces. Some of them even crossing over into fertility, because what do we use as fertilizer? Dung, waste, excrement. So
again, Hayao Miyazaki being on the nose, Spirited Away talks about it briefly.
Exactly. So, and I don't bring that up to be like, I know all about these things, but it's just to say that there's a deeper dive that other folks can do into these things. And to say that the idea of exploring the spiritual aspects and the magical potential of filth is not a new idea at all. And what actually really has inspired me to talk more on this and kind of bring it to the forefront of, like, my discussion is so for those of you who may not be as familiar with me, I write a lot about my bioregion, which is Florida, which is also Temp, where Temp is at.
Wow, you're doxing me.
Am I? Are
no.
You? Are you not famously the Florida woman of witchcraft?
please no. I hope that's not my reputation.
That's how I think of you.
Thank you. Yeah, the devil has red hair in Florida. That's for fucking sure.
That's canon. So I'm primarily known for just making Florida as big of a fucking deal as possible. Refalling in love with the state that I grew up in, that I hated as a child and had to kind of evolve in my thinking. And kind of talking about the way in which, like, the stories we tell in folklore inspires our practices. And so in this kind of conversation about animism and bioregional animism, I see something that is kind of shallow in this conversation, which is just the land, capital T, capital L, the land. And people talk about working with the land and being one with the land. And it goes no deeper than that. It's just, it's almost this status symbol, an online status symbol of being like, look how connected I am. Look how in tune I am because I know the land TM, right? Buy my Etsy witchcraft supplies. It's just something that I want people to explore. I want people to consider what is below that surface, right? Sure, you might have a connection to maybe the iconic animal of your area. Like for me, that would be an alligator, right? What is more iconic of Florida than the alligator? But let's go a little bit deeper. Let's go literally below the earth. Let's talk about things like, what does your geology look like? What is the bedrock of your area? And what are the spirits of your home, your apartment building, your dorm room? And below those, what are the spirits of your sewage system? You know, these things that we think of as gross and disgusting, I think also connects to kind of our cultural shame around these subjects, where we look down on people who do work with things that are filthy. We look down, I'm using the royal we here, right? Looking down on janitors, on garbage truck drivers, on sewage processors, on plumbers, because their job, essential to ensuring that we are healthy as a community, are shamed for it almost.
Well, I think it's really important to anyone that works with the land, TM, right? Okay. To anyone that works with the land, I talk about it every year. Certain holidays, I specifically do acts of service, and I specifically go and pick up trash. I do a lot of beach cleanup because I work with a sea god, so that's something that is a very devotional act for me, is I go and I physically like pick up trash, pick up litter. I do it outside. I do it in my complex. I will go to parks and do it. When we work with the land, that includes not just being on the land or walking on the land or taking a video on the land or, you know, leaving food or planting seeds. It also means cleaning it up. It means removing dead things from it, not just dead animals, but dead plants. And, you know, rest in peace, my marigold that I killed. It means removing that out of my house too. So, you know, there is this kind of, you know, nebulous of the land. Well, what is the land? What does it mean, right? If we get down to the basis of what is the land, right? Beneath your feet, there was land before there was concrete. And the spirits that resided on that land still reside there, but they're joined with spirits that are newer, that happened because of the structures, that happened because of the cars, because of the pavement. You know, I was reading something today. There's a video game that was popular in the early 2000s called SimCity. If you know, were a kid in the early 2000s, you know what SimCity is. I was reading this article today from the creator of SimCity, who was trying to describe how he went out and he went to a city and he was measuring parking lots and measuring buildings because they wanted to make the game accurate to real life. And he realized that parking lots were often like double or triple the size of the actual store that they would be doing. So the game was designed to kind of like hide the parking lots, and they would put them like underground or whatever so that like you could have more fun space on the surface of the land. But for us as magical practitioners, as people who maybe have an animistic view of the world, it's really important to recognize where that pavement is being put in, where the plants are being chopped down, where the trees are being, you know, removed. If you have a city that has any kind of forested area, anytime that that land is about to go up for some kind of development, there's usually a city hall meeting involved with it. What are the chances that you know about that, or that you could go lobby to prevent that from happening? That little patch of forest in your very urban area may be the last place for certain animals or insects to really have a home. Not to mention any of the spirits that would be there for the plants, the trees, that are on the ground or that people go to connect to. So, you know, recognizing what does the land mean to me? I can't tell you definitively, like, the definition of the land is this. You have to experience the land, TM. You have to go outside and take off your shoes and put your feet on the pavement and put your feet on the dirt and allow yourself to feel what it is below you.
And I want to touch on two points that you brought up. One, how development does tie into this, because there's an aspect of development that is obviously harmful. And then there's also the aspect of the development that already exists, which is kind of the vein that I'm trying to tap into with my practice currently. Because I think even I, as someone who's like, right, respect your city spirits, engage with your city spirits, oftentimes that's still hard for me to continually do that and think of my home as a magical space, my city as a magical space, and of course the sewers as a magical space. And in the flip side, that getting involved actively with preservation of land. Right now, the Everglades, and this is something that I will always bring up when talking about these things, the Everglades are under attack. They have been under attack for generations at this point.
I live on developed Everglades.
Exactly. Everything south of Lake Okeechobee used to be this sprawling, what I've heard you refer to since I was a kid as the liver of America, because it's what filters so much of the grime and pollutants and the things that cause harm to our environment. And the Everglades cleans all of that and helps us survive, not unlike our modern sewer system and water processing plants. But it is under attack constantly from development. And so just like Tam said, it's so important that if you are an animist, that you are engaged, not just with your landscape as it exists as a pristine object in your mind, but also the politics behind it. And I know people are really trying to reject politics and witchcraft, but it will all...
You can't divorce it. You can't divorce it. That's my opinion. That's another episode completely.
Sure. And I won't go too deep into it because I've made myself clear on plenty of platforms that witchcraft is political. But if you're going to call yourself an animist and you're not going to get involved with your local politics that directly affect your bioregion and its maintenance, and this is especially sensitive in Florida where we have so many at-risk animal populations and plant life that are keystone. The gopher tortoise, the Florida panther, so many of our plants and animals are keystone in keeping us alive. The manatee, these important animals are so at risk.
Oh, manatees make me cry, man. Manatees make me cry.
Like, and it's so important that we know what is happening with our waste, with the development happening around us. And I do definitely want to have a larger conversation about that. But where I wanted to kind of direct this today was facing your everyday life filth, right? Like literally your bathroom as a practitioner, your home as a magical place. How do we interact with the spirits that allow us to safely dispose of the worst parts of our body, right? And I hope no one is listening to this while they're eating. If you are, please feel free to pause and come back when you are not, because we will be talking about feces, excrement, urine, things that are gross.
Look, I want to do one thing before I ask you a question, because if I don't say it now, I'm going to forget to say it. All right. If you are squeamish about putting urine in your spell work, then perhaps you're doing it wrong. I'm just going to put it out there.
Mm-hmm.
There's an element of that. And I've seen it online that beginners come in and they'll be like, you know, I want to do like protection magic or whatever. And someone will be like, oh yeah, do X, Y, Z and like add a little bit of urine. And they'll be like, urine? Oh my God, I can't do that. and there is a long-standing traditional historical basis for doing that. It's not a dead practice, and it's not, no one's like, you know, jerking your chain on that. Like, really, a lot of people are out here doing it. And so, you know, there are techniques. So if you are unsure of how to use these, you know, because that becomes like a body tag lock, right? Are there other ways you could do that? Yes. But there are certain methods that are historically used for certain purposes. And so that's why they're suggested. And so if those methods aren't for you, if you're listening to this episode and you're like, you know what, I could never put urine in like my floor wash or XYZ, then maybe think of another way that you could do that type of magic. So protective magic that doesn't require that, because some of these things kind of do, and it's hard to get around that. Could you make a floor wash without urine? Yes, you could. Sure. But it's not going to be as strong as one with it. And that's just the truth.
I mean, and that's the thing, right? Like, our bodies are power. Our bodies, and I don't want to get into the debate of bodies, you know, as a queer body person, bodies are weird, man. Bodies are weird. Like, I'm non-binary, and going on a journey for myself, I've known I've been non-binary for a long time, but very publicly just recently have been like, hey, these are my pronouns. I don't mind if it takes you a little bit of while to get used to it, but, you know, this is where I'm at. And it's hard for a lot of people, I get that, but just being a queer-bodied person, there's a lot of weird conflict within my body. And I think we as a culture, and I'm specifically speaking of like American culture, even though that's not a monolith, it is close enough, right? There's so much shame integrated into our bodies. And part of the work of addressing animism towards filth can kind of help and has helped me get more comfortable in my skin in a way.
Mm-hmm.
Because it makes me pose important questions that I think we don't pose. And it's very easy to get into like bathroom humor and like, yeah, laugh, chuckle, have fun with it. But how do you honor your piss? How do you honor, I hope you weren't going to keep us from getting an explicit rating. How do you honor your shit? How do you honor your blood, your spit, your falling hair, your fat rolls? Like, how do you honor these things that are a part of your body that everything tells you to be ashamed of or embarrassed about? And how do you integrate that into your existence? And I don't have the answer for that. It's hard. But I have been going on this journey of looking at filth spirits and sewer spirits as two sides of the same coin. Purity and contagion, or I had the word in my head and it just slipped right through, but that which is clean and that which is contaminated, which is the word I was looking for. I've expressed this through my art. I'm a lino cut artist, and most of that art reflects what I'm exploring spiritually. So I have a piece that's a two-headed rat god that is kind of my devotional art to the sewers, to honor the cleansing that takes place in these rooms, right? So everyone thinks of rats as disgusting little goblin animals, but rats are typically actually very clean. They don't like to be dirty. They like to clean themselves pretty meticulously. And yes, there can be some scary rats. So this is, I view, in a metaphorical sense, this spirit as a two-headed rat, one which is the smooth down clean one and one which is a little bit more disheveled and aged and caked with grime. Because when I need to do something like purification work on my body, on myself, whether it's to work on my own mental health and whether it's to heal my body because I've got my own medical journey, aging is not fun. As
aging
an elder
is not real. If you're a witch, aging's not real. You'll stay young forever.
As an aging millennial, elder millennial, I can tell you it is. you know, you just, you go through changes and you come to appreciate the shower. And that sounds funny, but I appreciate the shower so much more. And I do so much devotional work in the shower, which is really about me thanking the spirits for washing these things away, me thanking the sewer for taking in the dirtiest parts of myself and allowing me to live a cleaner life by taking that. And so that's just the conversation. There isn't really an end point or a start point to this. It just is that conversation about how do we become, as animists and bioregional practitioners, fully incorporated with our spaces. And this was one that I think had gone really ignored, and I just want to continue that conversation and give my own examples. Like I said, especially when I have health issues that are bogging me down, my shower is like a sanctuary. It is the place that gives me relief. When I have migraines, the only time I feel any sense of relief is in a hot shower. And I know everyone can relate to that. But how often do we find ourselves becoming grateful for having that and appreciative? And it's also very personal for me as someone who's been accused of, and probably rightfully so, of being a germaphobe. I'm doing air quotes for anyone that can't see. I have a lot of struggles with a lot of compulsions and aversions to things having germs on them. Sometimes it manifests itself in a really small way of avoiding door handles. And sometimes it can be a little interfering, where if I touch something that I think might have been touched by someone else, I can't, my hand is off to the side until I can wash it, right? So kind of having that journey where I'm trying to work past that in my own life, getting into connection with spirits who are about feces and sewage is a very, very interesting and confronting experience that has made me more grateful for the privilege that I stand in, right? Of being able to have a place to go to.
Yeah, I think like I work from it from within this realm, but on a very opposite end than you do, because you're working with like dirt itself, kind of in a way, and I work very much, and work is loose air quotes on that, but I pay a lot of reverence and respect to my house spirits, and I struggle with mental health, and so there will be, you know, days or weeks go by where like certain things have not been cleaned, or, you know, like I'll wake up and I'll be like, I have to shower today. Like I have to. And, you know, that's just sometimes if you struggle with, you know, your mental health or whatever, that can happen. That can happen to even someone that is, you know, like not, you know, quote unquote, mentally ill or whatever, like anyone can fall into depression or have like a really bad panic attack or whatever, and kind of like shut down all the avenues of their lives and suddenly like find themselves surrounded. And like, they're like, oh my God, like I haven't done my dishes in like 2 or 3 days or whatever it is, you know? Right. And so I pay a lot of like reverence to my house spirits. So cleaning can absolutely be like a devotional act for me. Is this something that I want to do? No, never. Absolutely never. But it's something that has become very spiritual to me because it's important to my house. And if I have not done certain things, there is one particular spirit that lives in one of the bathrooms in my house. It will let me know that it's angry. Like, it's not quiet about it. And it's basically, like, my, like, where my bed is, it kind of, like, it faces man, someone that's going to listen to this is going to be like, man, the feng shui in your house is off. Okay. But so my bed, like the head of my bed faces the door, and like, I'm like in a clear shot to this doorway. Like if, so when I'm in bed, if I roll over the wrong angle, like, you know, your face kind of points down a little bit, like I'll see through the hallway to my, in my house, and it'll be there letting me know, like, you didn't clean the bathroom.
Right.
And you said you're, especially if I tell my house spirits that I'm going to clean something and then I don't clean it, I end up, you know, like I don't, they make themselves known. And so in a way, I'm kind of working on the opposite end of the spectrum where it's like, I haven't become comfortable with the filth. I've become motivated to build a relationship with cleaner spirits, or like energy that kind of functions in that way.
But I think that does work with the spirits of filth. And I say that because I think that when I look at the sewage spirits, which is where my focus is on now, right? And in my kind of practice is to, when something comes to me and it's something that I want to explore, I explore it for months and months and months on end. So this is still an ongoing journey for me. And I try not to get distracted. I talk about in the past, like, if I'm going to learn how to work with a plant from a medicinal perspective, from a spiritual perspective, I'm going to spend months, sometimes a year, working with one fern to understand that spirit. And that's kind of my approach. So in hearing you talk about that made me also think about filth has its place. We can't live in filth. Humans cannot survive successfully in filth. Hearing you talk about mental health and how it affects the cleanliness of the home and how that throws off the balance is a huge, like, yes, I feel seen, I feel heard, because that's something that I struggle with extensively. I get drained really easily. And so what is the last thing on my list at the end of the day is to clean. But then that clutter and the amount of garbage that can accumulate then starts to have a negative impact. I can only speak on my experience, but seeing garbage piling around my wonderful home, that is the place where I feel my safest and where I have pleasant memories, it makes me sad. There's no other way. Like, it just makes me sad. And on the spiritual side of that, there is a kind of context for filth being out of place, generating spirits of uncleanliness within your home, right? I wish I had the reference with me right now, but I do have a book on yokai, and I am by no means anywhere near an expert when it comes to Japanese folklore or spiritual practices, but I have passing familiarity with yokai, and there is a particular spirit that only appears when someone has not been cleaning the bathroom and is just there to be a nasty, scary thing that reminds you, you need to clean. And as you were talking about, I'm kind of picturing, there was this show in the early 2000s called Dead Like Me. I don't know if you're familiar. Anyone who watched sci-fi as a kid in the mid 2000s might remember this, but they had these little death gremlins that would cause accidents for people that were like too young to die. And that's almost what this feels like to me, this idea of garbage accumulating and creating a space for these out of place spirits to be born and out of place filth spirits to accumulate in your home. And that is a relationship you don't necessarily want to cultivate. You want to appease your home spirits. You want your house spirits to be the ones that are there and populating and bringing in joy. But when we have this filth that has been displaced and remains too long, we throw things out of balance. So I definitely think that even though you're coming at it from a different perspective of maintaining cleanliness, that ties directly into it because everything has its place. Does that get more complicated when we think about things like landfills? It totally does. And that's another aspect that is worth exploring. But all of it continues to tie into each other.
Yeah. So what are some ways that you would use kind of garbage or filth magic personally?
So outside of just connecting with those spirits, I think garbage magic is kind of this great equalizer, right? This is a conversation that's been ongoing about how witchcraft is inherently anti-consumerist, inherently anti-capitalist. And yet I think a lot of us still feel that pressure to have the nicest petition papers or the best tools, or, you know, we have this idea that we have to do things with a very, very specific way. And yes, sometimes you do need to have a little bit of, you know, your spirits want things in a particular way, things to be nice, but your garbage can probably contains everything you need to make magic. And that would be my biggest thing, is just, if you are finding yourself in a place where you're like, oh crap, I need to go out and get this thing and that thing and all these components I need to do to a 5 metaphysical stores, open a garbage bag. As safely as that is for you, wear gloves, right? Open your garbage bag. Don't go to someone else's.
Go to the neighbor's house.
With it being, you know, 2021 and we're in the middle of a pandemic, right?
Don't get the police called on you.
Yeah, no. But, you know, find scraps of cardboard. You know, if you are buying soda or seltzer water, cut that up and use that for your petition paper. Or using, like, everybody gets that those garbage coupon books.
They're not garbage. They have good coupons in them.
Sometimes. I just ignore them.
They have good coupons.
Yes. And I shouldn't ignore them. And you're very right. But if you do get those and you don't particularly use them, rip those out and make sachets with those. You know, we don't need to always be sewing together these perfect sachets of ingredients. Roll it into newspaper, roll it into these bits of coupons or whatever it is you have rolling around. I think the first thing that comes to mind with garbage magic for me is Maleficium or Baneful Workings. One of my favorites for a long time is, because I try to keep my Maleficium away from the house most of the time because it can be really gross. But find an active porta potty and take a picture of someone you don't like and throw it in the bottom of the porta potty.
Hot tip.
Let everyone that uses that day shit on the person you hate.
Oh, allow the community. Good one.
Allow the community to continually add to this working, to shit on their life, to ruin it, to decay them in front of you, to surround them with disease. This is particularly effective in political magic. Write the name of your enemies on toilet paper and use that toilet paper for what is it intended for, and then flush it down the goddamn toilet. You know, get nasty if that person's deserving of it. You know, back before the age of COVID, cigarette butts would be another one that make for good tag locks. And another thing that I definitely want to touch on, and this again ties into something that I briefly mentioned, was that privilege, right? I think working in these realms of filth and trash and how does that intersect with magic kind of automatically should trigger ideas of privilege in our lives, because these are things that we don't have to, or at least I do not have to inherently work with. And something that really put into perspective was a friend of mine a number of years ago kind of telling me a story as we were talking about spirits that we work with that are not gods, but personifications, right? And they worked with trash, capital T trash, the spirit who is trash. And they worked with them specifically while they were homeless. And they would petition trash to help them find food and make pacts with trash to be able to find safe lodging. And so when we're thinking about these things and how magic intersects that, there is the spirit of filth that you can petition for protection, right? Protection from disease, protection from the dangers of living homeless, of starvation, of tainted food. If you rely on for lack of a better term, dumpster diving as your primary means of procuring sustenance for yourself or your family. Make pacts with those spirits. Create charms. There's a lot of, in a lot of the older grimoires, there's a lot of treasure hunting magic that takes place. It's very prominent in like The Cunning Man's Handbook by Jim Baker. There's a whole section on treasure hunting magic. And all of this treasure hunting magic was for like literal gold, finding buried treasure, contacting the guardian spirits of these treasure troves. And I'm very much about experimentation and doing things that work for you. Use treasure hunting magic to find the things that you need to survive. If you know you're going to be spending your day, you know, and maybe we can take it back a notch into something that's less dire. Maybe your job relies on you being able to find, I don't know, secondhand furniture, right? Create a charm, maybe what a treasure hunter might have used for their charm work, to tuck in your bra, tuck in your shoe, tuck in wherever, to lead you in the right direction, to turn down the right street to find these secondhand goods, or to just so happen to come by a restaurant right as they're about to throw out, you know, fresh food and kind of luck out that way, you know? Dowsing is still a modern day way of finding not just water, which I think is what people mostly associate with dowsing, like water.
Oh, I think ley lines.
I'm from the country. I'm used to people finding wells and shit with twigs. But instead of, you know, I'm not suggesting go around town with a dowsing rod looking for the best place to find your secondhand goods, but use the methods that were used for cutting your dowsing rods, finding those branches that are growing in a Y and cutting them in that particular hour, and wear it around your neck as a charm, that charm will lead you in the right direction. I mean, there's so many different ways that you can broaden your horizons and think about what it means to work with trash, what it means to look at the things that we throw away and start to value them. You know, this is something that artists who work in kind of the found material genre are very familiar with. Turning things that are thrown onto the ground into pieces of art. Anyone who's familiar with the work of drag artist Ms. Cracker is probably familiar with the story of when she was a kid growing up in New York. Her mom would just kind of send her out and say, okay, go find a bunch of trash, bring it home, and we're going to make art tonight. You know, if you can make art out of trash, you can make magic out of trash, and you can survive through trash. It's hard. It might be difficult, but there's spirit everywhere, even in those places that we don't acknowledge on a daily basis.
Yeah, I only have two solid examples really of like how I would use it and how I do use it. One, reduce, reuse, recycle. I'm a green bitch. Okay. So I'm all about recycling and I love buying glass jar products just so I can recycle it. And that does fall into this sphere. I do a lot of recycling and I live in a place where, we don't, like, my city doesn't really recycle, because we don't have, it's hard to explain where I live and have it make sense, but we don't have trash bins in my city. We have this place that you drive to if you want to recycle, and it's a single stream recycle, which has a whole bunch of issues in itself, because if, like, it's contaminated, so I have a bin at my house that I bought and I force my house to put recyclable items in this bin. And then I drive it to the recycling place like once a week. So, you know, reuse, recycle, things that could have been trash that other people might have thrown in the garbage, get reused in my house. And so if you eat meat, there's a very good chance that you will come across bones in that. And that is something that you can take and use. I've seen, and you know, Marshall, the Witch of Southern Light, I believe on his podcast, it was on Folkcraft. So if you go back to the episode of Folkcraft with Marshall, on Knot and Cord Magic, he does discuss using chicken bones, from rotisserie chickens. So that is something that you can use. And now he is making charms with it, but that still does fall into this kind of reusing things that would otherwise be garbaged.
Absolutely. Throw those chicken bones on an anthill, come back a few days later, and you've got yourself plenty of good working tools.
Yep. So those are, that's it. That's it for us today. So if you'd like to support the podcast, we do have a Patreon. It will be under Folkcraft, and the links to that will be available. I'm Temperance. You can find me online at Wild Woman Witchcraft or Temperance Alden. My book, Year of the Witch, is available everywhere books are sold.
And this is Aaron Oberon. You can find me only on Instagram, at Aaron Oberon. I make a lot of cool art, I think. You can check it out. And if you're interested in my book, Southern Cunning, American Folkloric Witchcraft in the American South, you can find that also wherever books are sold.
And that's it. Thank you.